not a man, a machine.
I use it every day. Probably the best thing I use it for is getting into my house. Every day after work, I get out of the car.
They cannot make things like that yet.
You know, I just bump up against the reader, it unlocks the door, and I'm in.
Not yet. Not for about 40 years.
And that alone has made it all worth it.
Are you saying it's from the future?
Emil Grafster is a bit of a tech head, and 5 years ago, when he got fed up with the amount of keys in his life, he decided to implant a tiny radio frequency identification chip into each hand.
Technology that actually interacts with the body, it forms intimate links with the body. I consider that to be cybernetic technology, whereas an RFID implant really is quite simple. It's just moving the RFID, you know, access card from the pants pocket to the skin pocket. It doesn't interact with the body in any way, and so in that regard, I really don't think of myself as a cyborg. But as technology evolves and these things become more complex with a lot more capability, that line's going to be eradicated rather quickly.
A lot of people consider the whole concept of implantable computing as being science fiction. It really is here and it's happening right now. So we don't have to extrapolate probably too many years before increased memory, or maybe we can increase IQ in some way by using brain stimulation. In the near future, I think this will become relatively commonplace.
That's Dr. Mark Gasson from the University of Reading. He and Emil have come out to Australia for a conference at the University of Wollongong on the social implications of emerging technologies. He says brain implants are already being used to treat Alzheimer's patients, but Dr. Gasson uses his chip to get in and out of the lab.
I also integrated the reader into my mobile phone, which allowed me to use my mobile phone, but no one else. So if my phone got stolen, then only I could be using it, and it wouldn't be used to run up loads of credit. But also in a research context, so doing various experimentations with this type of technology, we use it there as well.
Dr. Gasson was actually the first person in the world to contract a computer virus.
We're interested in looking at how capable these devices have become, and being able to infect a device like this with a virus really helps us demonstrate the sort of capabilities that these types of devices are now capable of. I mean, they can store information and manipulate information and do very simple computations. And as the technology becomes more complex, more potential risks become apparent.
For example, some people have linked chip implant technology to their credit card, which Emil Grafster is cautious about.
There are some very serious concerns. You know, VeriChip, their implant, which is designed for permanent implantation, I mean, removal is very difficult. That chip, once it's in, it's really not able to be upgraded. If you lose your credit card, you can get a new credit card. The cards are very hard, at this point anyway, to hack the encryption, but it's really not necessary because you can just buy a reader that has the decrypting keys in it. It's just any commercial credit card reader, and you just hook it up to a computer and you can get credit card information.
So does that mean that this kind of technology could open up a wealth of information for hackers, potentially?
Well, I think we need to be careful when we're talking about the risk associated with this sort of technology. The type of applications that it can be applied for tend to be fairly unique and fairly individual. So at the moment, there's no largely commercialized technology application that opens itself up to being exploited in that way. And obviously, as these devices become more complex, the potential for vulnerabilities which can be exploited will become quite apparent.
So how easy is it to get an implant? Emil says he just researched it himself, bought it off the internet, and got a plastic surgeon friend to implant them.
You know, I put my injection procedure online on YouTube, and other people, you know, have got it done. They video it, and now other people are just seeing that happen and finding out where to buy these tags, probably from the forum or online other places, and then they're just going to their doctors and having it done. And I really don't, you know, they're not involved in the community, so the exact number of people that have had it done is kind of hard to come up with, but my guess is around 200 to 300.
But although having an implant to replace all your keys, log into your computer, or perhaps one day inject extra memory into your brain sounds amazing, Dr. Mark Gasson says it's not necessarily all straightforward.
This has knock-on effects, certainly has legal ramifications when we start talking about fundamental human rights that protect the body. If we extend that to protect the technology as well, then certainly the implications need to be explored. And certainly the ethics of using this type of technology, we're likely to cause another type of digital divide, the haves and the have-nots, the I want it and I don't want it. Well, actually, there may be social pressures, much like having mobile phones. A lot of people originally didn't want to have a mobile phone, in part because of the unknown health risks and so on. But actually, it's really become socially unacceptable to not have a mobile phone, and most people do. And we're probably likely to see a very similar phenomenon happen with implantable technologies.